Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast by Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside my co-host World B, Michael Freer, and this is episode number 43, the Thanasis Antetokounmpo episode, as Thanasty is a good friend of the show and, of course, a Bucks fan favorite. Tonight, we're thrilled to be joined by a very special guest. Oh, wait, it's actually our other co-host, Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media, is in the house with us here tonight. Bruce, do you want me to do a redo like that take transition foul at the end of that Celtics game, or are we good to keep going?
I was just wondering, I mean, did it come down to Thanasis Antetokounmpo versus Kendrick Perkins for number 43? But I'm more than happy with Thanasis. He is a dear friend of the show.
Absolutely. No, I mean, Chris Humphries, Pascal Siakam, the list goes on. 43 has quite a bit of other players to consider, but of course we've got to go with the friend of the show here. So great to have you back, Bruce. And I bet your time away was a lot of fun. And speaking of bets, Bet Online is the proud sponsor of the podcast and our home to all sports bets. BetOnline.ag is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs, basketball, MLB, NHL hockey, right to UFC and boxing. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest ways to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games you can play right from your home. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, that is B-L-E-A-V, to receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And Bruce, since you are back with us here tonight, let's start with you on tonight's opening tip.
Thank you, guys. Great job while I was away. Thanks for holding it down. And we'll talk a little bit more later in the show as to what I was doing while I was away.
Awesome.
But for the moment, is there such a thing as being snake bitten? Over the years, Anthony Davis, the future Hall of Famer, has had the worst luck when it comes to injuries. As we record this show on Thursday evening, AD's Lakers lead the series with the Warriors 3-2, with game 6 on Friday night in LA. And while his status is not 100% known at this point, it's hard to imagine him not playing as long as he didn't suffer a concussion, which we're told he did not. But after seeing him take a hard hit to the head from Kevon Looney on Wednesday, I got this sick feeling in my stomach. My first reaction was, not again. AD has rarely gotten through an NBA season without some major injury. In just the previous 3 years, he's missed time due to injuries to the following body parts: foot, back, wrist, calf, knee, thumb, head, thigh, groin, shoulder, adductor, Achilles, quad, ankle, heel, rib, finger, and eye. And that's just the past 3 years, okay? Jeez. But seeing him take that shot to the head, I couldn't help but feel for him. He's been crushing it for the Lakers in the playoffs, and the team is a great story. But based on his reaction after the hit, it sure looked like something resembling a concussion. Now, I'm no doctor, and I trust the Lakers medical staff, but if you're AD, you're going to do anything you can to be out there on Friday night. I just hope that he really does feel right if he decides to play. It promises to be a really physical game with Draymond Green and Looney throwing their weight around. And if AD shows the least bit of weakness, they'll come at him hard. I hope AD is physically well and ready for what awaits him, both on the court and regarding his personal well-being.
Well said there, Bruce. And yeah, I'm quite surprised that he is probable for tomorrow's night's game. Obviously, I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got to offer, and hopefully he's in good health. But I thought for sure after that hit that he would be ruled out with a concussion. World B, what do you have for an opening tip here tonight?
Thank you, Ross. The all NBA teams were announced on Wednesday, and regardless of who you feel got snubbed or which team certain players belonged on, I wanted to point out that how this is the last time, at least for a few years, that this version of all NBA teams will be used. That's because beginning next season, because of the new collective bargaining agreement that takes effect, these teams will not only be positionless, but there's a 65-game minimum required to be included for postseason awards. Now, if you adopt next season changes to this season, that means the following players are not qualified for all NBA teams this season: Giannis, Steph, LeBron, Damian Lillard, and Jimmy Butler. In addition, Joel Embiid, the MVP, and Luka Doncic would have qualified by just one game. Fans of the sport have wanted to use the issue of load management to be addressed somehow by the league. Well, here's one way the league has decided to deal with this problem. And considering the bonuses and contract incentives are tied into making one of these teams, it will make next season a very interesting watch.
Well said there, will be. And my opening tip goes very seamlessly with yours, because the now formerly reigning back-to-back MVP and Nikola Jokic was completely disrespected this week. And, you know, I begged and pleaded for this All-NBA Awards to the system to change. Case in point is the Joker this year. He was named to the second team, and that is a complete joke. He led his team to the best record in the Western Conference while nearly averaging a triple-double with 24.5 points per game, 11.8 rebounds per game, and 9.8 assists per game. 0.2 assists is what, you know, held him back from that triple-double average for a season. And to somehow make matters worse, Mark Jackson somehow left the Joker off his MVP ballot entirely the same week. Jackson did provide a public apology for the error, but how that happens is beyond me. And just overall, it's been a tough week for the Joker as far as getting the flowers he certainly deserves for his regular season performances. So, of course, he just continues to break records and ball out here in the playoffs, and he's currently holding a 3-2 lead over the Suns. And I know that game's going on as we tape, and we'll discuss that one soon. But first, to start our first quarter, Bruce, let's lead it off with you. I know you're all smiles here tonight and a bit relieved. Game 6 of the 76ers-Celtics second-round matchup just wrapped up with Boston taking home the victory, and the series will now shift back to Beantown. They won 95-86. What are your initial thoughts after watching that one?
So I'm watching the game with my beautiful wife, Nancy, who's become quite an NBA playoffs fan. She's been watching games with me pretty much every night, which is a huge win in my marriage.
Absolutely.
And for this entire game, I've never had less fun watching a Celtics playoff game that they won. Because watching them play, when they had a chance about midway through the second quarter, they really had Philadelphia down. I mean, they had them by 16 points, then 14. And with about just under 3 minutes left in the first half, they were up by 14 points. But they just, you know, they stop playing the way that gets them there. They don't move the ball. They turn the ball over carelessly. They take shots early in the shot clock that they could easily get that same shot and work the defense a little and make the other team guard you. Hello. All right. They just don't make smart moves. And watching them play, I'll tell you, the reason they won the game, I mean, Jason Tatum's going to get all the credit for hitting all those threes down the stretch. It was nice that he finally showed up after 45 minutes of game. Although he did have rebounds and he, you know, he did other things, but you need him to score. I mean, he's a 30-point guy. He needs to score. Okay. But watching them just basically play so casual, when they had him by 16, I said, just get twos. You don't need threes. Push the lead up by 2 points, you know, move the ball around, make them guard you. They don't do that stuff. And it was only through the real, like, the spirit of Marcus Smart, who was the only guy out there who really had any fire in his belly for the most part, for the good chunk of that game. He's diving for loose balls. He's ripping the ball out of Joel Embiid's hands. He was even making some threes. I mean, you know, and I've always said, I'll live with some occasional questionable shots by that guy because of everything else he does. And tonight was a classic example of why I love Marcus Smart. But right up until Tatum hit his second three, I thought they're gonna figure out a way to blow this game. Luckily, they didn't. But you know what? I don't feel great going into Game 7 on Sunday. They've been very shaky at home in the playoffs. So I could easily see them thinking, ah, it's Game 7. It's at home. We'll have the crowd, blah, 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 and then not play desperate. They have to play, and every team has to play desperate. And luckily, you know, they were able to hang in there because of their defense. Some additional minutes for Robert Williams III, which I think made a difference. He played more tonight. So Yeah, I mean, I want to talk a little about the coach, but tonight we'll give him a little bit of a break because Tatum bailed him out, and luckily they live another day.
Yeah, Tatum had some big shots there down the stretch, two dagger threes to go ahead and put this one away for Boston. World B, I got to ask you, of course, Marcus Smart was the leading scorer for the Boston Celtics in this game. You're our numbers guy. What percentage chance, if I would have told you pregame, Marcus Smart's going to lead the team with 22 points here tonight? Do you think the Celtics would win?
No, obviously not, because that means they probably weren't going to put a big number on the board. And it turns out they didn't. Held under 100 points and still won the game. This was two things tonight. This was Jason Tatum coming to life at the very end, the way superstars can do when you struggle the whole night and you are able at the end to have the confidence to take those threes at the end and make them the way he did, 16 in the fourth quarter. And the other thing is the defense they played on the 76ers in the fourth quarter held them to 13 points, the fewest points they've had in a quarter in this postseason, and 5 of 20 from the field, 0 of 8 from three-point range. This is something to be concerned about. I know Bruce is concerned about the Celtics going into Game 7. He, you know, there's reason to feel that way. But if you go back to the last two tight games in this series, Game 4, both in Philly, Game 4 and Game 6, Game 5 was a blowout in Boston, so the fourth quarter didn't really factor into anything. In the fourth quarter, Game 4 and Game 6, Philadelphia has 28 combined points on 11 of 39 shooting. That's less than 30% from the field and 0 of 11 from three-point range. They got James Harden and you got the MVP and they're not able to score points. That's either them really, you know, crapping the bed when it counts, or that's the Celtics defense, which is one of the best in the league, showing up. So it was a desperate time for the Celtics. When they had the nice, they came out to a great start, like Bruce said, it got away from them a little bit. Philly is, I've mentioned before, Philly's one of the best all around teams in the league. So they were going to make a rally, in my opinion, and they did. And when the game got tight, the star came out, the biggest star outside of Joel Embiid, first team All-NBA guy, finally showed up. And, you know, Marcus Smart got the most points and played a really good game at both ends. Like, we know he's going to do it at the defensive end. But they gave him, right from the beginning, he was scoring. But Tatum's scoring down the stretch the way your big guy is supposed to do it. And their defense is what really is the reason you're heading back to Boston.
Absolutely. And one of the things I thought was very interesting in this one is kind of just the decision-making down the stretch. Of course, we had the odd play with the transition take foul that I joked about earlier, where Maxey had to go back and actually redo the free throws, which was odd. I was shocked Embiid was going to the line, left a bit confused. But also confusing to me on Philly's end was with 1.9 seconds left on the shot clock, late into the fourth quarter, they had James Harden inbounding the basketball. Not sure I agree with Doc Rivers' decision to have him be the inbounder, despite the fact that he's probably the best passer out there. And then when Harden missed that floating layup, he missed it short, Celtics came down with the basketball. Even Doris Burke pointed it out on the broadcast. It just seemed like they quit. And this was their chance to put it away at home. I thought this was a must-win game for Philadelphia, despite obviously holding the lead in the series heading into Game 6. Bruce, how are you feeling about the Game 7? And are there, you wanted to talk about the coach a little bit, so tell me a little bit about how you felt Mike Mazzulla did tonight.
Yeah. Well, look, we know that that he is a rookie coach, and we said on a number of occasions along the way, I mean, we all said it, that you know there's going to be some concern about a guy who hasn't been through the fires of the postseason. The scrutiny, the decision-making. I mean, we all know that in the playoffs, coaching is magnified by about five times what it is during the regular season. There's way, way, way more at stake on decisions made by coaches, not only about calling timeouts, but on making adjustments. Like for instance, what he did tonight, finally, I have to believe that Brad Stevens had a come-to-Jesus talk with this guy and said, listen, you got to put Robert Williams in the game a little bit more, and you got to play him with Horford because Embiid is freaking killing you guys, and you need somebody to just kind of show up that he can't necessarily see over without having to work a little bit. And I think that was the big adjustment that he made. Williams doesn't have to score a bunch of points. He just has to do a little bit of rim running. He has to put his hands up on defense. He'll block a shot or two by accident. I mean, you know, he's a menace back there. So that was the one adjustment that I was praying he would make. And honestly, based on what I saw prior to this, I doubt he made that decision on his own. I think that one came from upstairs. I really think it did. And whatever the reason, if it's a learning experience for the guy based on that, it's great. You know, I mean, look, we all got bosses, right? In our cases, it's our wives, but at some point we do have bosses. And sometimes, you know, the boss is right. That's kind of sometimes why they're the boss. So you should listen to them. And as far as, you know, the other stuff with him, you know, his defenders will say, hey, it's not his fault that the players are missing wide open shots and blah, blah. And to a certain extent, that is true. But, you know, there is such a thing as putting somebody else in that might make a shot if these guys are cold. I mean, as opposed to running the same group out there. So, look, I said I didn't want to get on Joe. I hope that in the seventh game on Sunday, his team gets off to the kind of start that it did tonight and maybe, just maybe, play a little bit smarter with the lead and push the lead from 12 to like 18 or 20 instead of letting it go from 14 to 7, just which is what they did just before halftime. With 2:46 left in the second quarter, they were up by 14. When they got to halftime, they were up by 7. And I just felt it's a good thing halftime came when it did, because they would have been losing if they'd have kept playing for a few more minutes there.
By the way, this Bruce will remember this. This reminds me a lot from the Philly perspective. This reminds me a lot of the Hawks Celtics series in 1988, the Eastern Conference semifinals, when the Hawks had a chance in game 6 to close out the series and they couldn't get it done. And Larry Bird said that was their chance and they blew it. And they went to Boston and it was one of the greatest game sevens in the history of the league. You had Larry Bird and Dominique Wilkins going back and forth in the fourth quarter. Very memorable game 7, but it doesn't happen if the Hawks close it out in game 6. Philadelphia had a chance to close it out tonight in game 6 and avoid going back to Boston. This may have been their chance, and they may have actually let it get away.
You know, Harden was brutal tonight. Harden had a bad game. He just really did. Yeah. You know, if it wasn't for Maxey, they would – really have lost this game by a lot. He, that guy, man.
When he's going good, we talked about it the other day, Ross and I did. When the Sixers offense is going at its best, at its most efficient, is when James Harden's got it going on. And when he's got it going on like he had in a couple of games, a couple of 40-point games, and their two wins, first two wins of the series, they were looking great, and the offense was clicking. When he struggles, like it did tonight, you end up with 86 points from one of the top 10 offenses in the league at home with the MVP in your lineup. So we can criticize James Harden and how lousy he played tonight. And he did. He didn't hit a field goal 4 for 16 from the field. He didn't hit a 3. But if they're going to win, they're not going to win Sunday or game 7 without James Harden having a good game. Maybe a great game is needed to win that game and to win game 7.
Guy's a Hall of Famer, so it's possible, Russ.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they need to send him off to Vegas to have an all-nighter one night, bring him back, because that seemed to work in game 1. So whatever works, right?
Isn't Atlantic City closer?
Let's go ahead and get to our second.
To travel so far.
Yeah. With that, let's go ahead and get into our second quarter as we'll be discussing the Nuggets and Suns. This game is currently underway at the time of our taping. It is game 6 tonight in Phoenix. The Suns are without both Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton here tonight. And World B, I'll go ahead and start with you. You think the Suns have a chance without Ayton down low?
It's going to be tough. It absolutely is going to be tough. They need somebody to body up to the Joker, and he's the biggest body they have for whatever you think of his performance. He's the biggest body they have. We said it after they were down 0-2. I said it. They needed this. If the Suns are going to get back in the series, they need their two big stars to go for 30 plus each game. And that's what happened in games 3 and 4. They scored 86 points in combined in game three and 72 in game four. They got huge performances in both games. What happened? They go back at game five and neither one of them had 30 and they got whooped. So they need big games out of those. You know, DeAndre Ayton being out stinks for them. Chris Paul being out stinks for them. But if Booker and KD do not have super duper star games, this series is ends with they don't have to make the trip to Denver.
Look, I mean, I know we're going to sound dated a little bit here, but I mean, Denver's up by 16 points in the first quarter. Durant has two. Joker is putting up numbers that might put him at a triple-double by halftime. He's got 12, 5, and 4, and there's still a few seconds left in the first quarter. So no Ayton, no shot, no Chris Paul. I think that was something they could have overcome because Booker was doing a good job making plays. And I think they play at a better pace because Chris likes to walk the ball up, whereas the other guys will you know, move with a little bit more, you know, speed. But actually, I think Cameron Payne had 10 points in the first quarter. Okay. So that's a pretty good, you know, job in place. But Durant has nothing. I don't think Denver is losing this game this evening. I mean, I mean, I hope I'm not looking like a moron when this show drops at 1 a.m. and Phoenix had a big comeback.
Yeah. No, you won't look like that because of this game. How about that, Bruce?
Oh, thank you, World B.
Well, fellas, I actually came into this podcast pretty optimistic for the Suns' chances. Reason being, without Ayton, I thought, you know, just giving the Joker a different look obviously couldn't hurt. I mean, he's playing tip-top basketball. I think getting Biombo out there would bring a little bit more toughness, a little more physicality, a guy that could block shots, at least a lot more than DeAndre Ayton can. And let's talk about DeAndre Ayton just a little bit, at least I will. I mean, he has, throughout each game, seemed like when adversity has hit him or maybe the team, he's disengaged from huddles, he's disengaged from his teammates. And, I mean, you can only do that so much before that vibe starts to really shift with either how the team feels about you or just the overall vibe of the team in that moment. So I thought maybe getting a different look out there. Jock Landale was a guy I thought provided some good minutes. He ran the floor hard, played hard on both ends, something Ayton wasn't doing. I thought maybe just maybe being back at home and, you know, just kind of handling the duties of rebounding basketball and, you know, trying to make it tough on Joker off catches and things of that nature, that, of course, the Suns could be fueled by Booker and KD's offense. But sure doesn't seem like that tonight. And if you would have told me Marcus Smart would have led the Celtics in points and Cameron Payne would be leading the Suns in points after one quarter, I probably would have passed out. So not looking good for Phoenix. Obviously, real tough to do without Chris Paul out there and against a team as good as the Denver Nuggets. I mean, they're not the number one overall seed for nothing. So,
by the way, Raj, you mentioned DeAndre Ayton, whatever. If you know, you guys remember during the offseason, it did not go smoothly with him returning to the Phoenix. He got signed to an offer sheet. Was it the Pacers that tried to sign him, and the Suns, who did not want to give him the max deal, eventually matched the offer sheet. But he did not react well to that whole process. And I don't know if that's been a carryover for the whole season or whatever, or if he's had I can't speculate on that because I don't know. But the things that you're mentioning about right now, it easily could have begun in the offseason because he was not a happy camper about how that all went down.
You know, I'm sure he's never really been happy with his offensive role. I mean, this guy was the number one overall pick in the draft in 2018. He was drafted ahead of Luka Doncic. He was drafted ahead of Michael Porter Jr. He was drafted ahead of Trae Young. All right. And, you know, and I think he feels personally insulted that, like, the guy who was chosen ahead of all these guys is considered, yeah, you just roll to the rim. We're not going to call anything for you. If you want any points, you better pound the offensive glass. I think, you know, the guy's got an ego. A lot of people do, but it's like, clearly it's affecting him. And one other thing, because I know there's other things you guys want to say. They say he's out game six due to a rib contusion. Okay. I don't really know what that consists of. Is that something where you can't raise your arms? I don't know. But I'll tell you what, I think he's also suffering from a major case of butt hurt, as Nikola Jokic has averaged 35, almost 14, and 10 assists in the first five games. Ayton looked like he wanted no part of Joker at any point in this series.
Totally agree with that. And that's pretty much all that I had to say on this one so far. Obviously, too early to really tell or provide feedback on tonight's game without getting a full 48 minutes, pun intended there. So let's go ahead and shift on over to the Knicks Heat series. And Bruce, we'll go ahead and start with you. I'm going to pull out the Uno reverse card here and let you be the first to discuss the Knicks' big win back at Madison Square Garden on Wednesday.
The Brunson burner was on fire on Wednesday night, playing all 48 minutes, 38 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 turnover. He willed the Knicks to a Game 5 win, and he kept their season alive. It's an absolute joke that this guy didn't make one of the three All-NBA teams. Nobody can deny that Luka Doncic and Damian Lillard are all-time greats, okay? But Brunson was at least as deserving as both of them, and maybe even De'Aaron Fox, for that matter, who had a great year. The fact that this guy wasn't voted one of the top three All-NBA teams tells me that people weren't really paying attention. And look, at the beginning of the year, I was not a huge Jalen Brunson fan. I admitted many times I was wrong about him. I didn't think he was a difference maker. I was so wrong. He was the difference on Wednesday night, World B.
Yeah, for me, Brunson put up a really impressive performance in all 48 minutes. Him and Quentin Grimes playing all 48 was really special. And when it's Tibbs, you're not really surprised to see your starters go those heavy minutes, but that was a bit of a shocker. For me, it was the energy level of this team, this Knicks team. They had absolutely zero in Miami in the two games, and they played like it, and they got, you know, beat up pretty good because of it. And they came out in the first quarter and did not have the energy to match the most energetic and the biggest hustling team of this postseason in Miami. I mean, they are one – I mean, hustling in the – not pool hustling. I mean, absolutely on the floor, working hard, doing everything with full energy in this series, in this playoffs, Miami Heat. And the Knicks were not matching that in the first quarter. And I'll tell you, in my opinion, when the series – that game turned – not the series, but that game turned, when Jalen Brunson – Julius Randle, excuse me, sat on the bench for almost the entire second quarter – and the team started to pick up their energy. The team started to pick up their play with a little more zip, a little more quickness in their steps at both ends. And either Julius Randle got the message or somebody told him in his ear, if you want to get back on the court, you better show me the energy, because he absolutely came back and he was humongous with his shooting and I keep saying energy, but that's what he had. And they needed it on that night to match him. Here's the thing, guys. Miami's not having a great series offensively. I mean, they're not. The Knicks are not playing well either. But Miami is getting – they are number one in these playoffs in deflections, loose balls recovered, screen assists, and charges drawn. I mean, that's everything. That's about heart. That's about effort. That's about hustle. They're number one in the entire playoffs in those categories. And if you want to beat this team, that overcomes so much when you can't shoot the ball, which is basically what they did until the fourth quarter in game five. But the Knicks world got a whole lot better when they matched the level of Miami's energy, and that's really the reason. If you can do that and play the defense with that energy, the way Miami's doing offensively, you can win these games. They can go down and win on Friday.
Now, you mentioned that energy, World B. I kind of want to flip it back to you real quick. Do you think they've learned their lesson from not having the energy out of the gates in Miami? Do you think we'll see a different Knicks team on the road this time around in a pivotal game six?
Well, I kind of thought they would have the energy right from the get-go in game five after being embarrassed. They weren't embarrassed in that they lost. It was just how they played in those two games. So I figured, oh, they're going to come back. The crowd's going to be – and they just – you know, no free throws in the first quarter. And, you know, they just weren't into the game. They were down 10. And they out-rebounded Miami by 20 after the first quarter, over the final three quarters. And all 40 of their free throw attempts came in the final three quarters. That's energy on both ends. That's hustling. That's, you know, grinding it out the way they have to do. And, you'd like to think that they can bring that again to game six. I'll tell you this, Tom Thibodeau, whatever you think about him, does not mind putting his guys, his big guys on the bench when it, if they're not doing it. Josh Hart gave absolutely nothing in game five, and he was sitting on the bench right there with the coach at the end for most of the game, really. He got in early foul trouble. He hadn't provided a whole lot in this series, to be honest. We're all big Josh Hart fans. We've given him a lot of credit during the season. I give him a ton of credit for turning the Knicks season around, that acquisition. But the facts are the facts. He has not played well in this series, and he's sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter. In that first series with Cleveland, R.J. Barrett sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter in crunch time for Josh Hart and Quentin Grimes to be on there. Julius Randle sits in crunch time in the fourth quarter in that first series. Tibbs will do it if you're not matching and you're not producing, you're not putting the level of effort out there that's needed. And they're going to need all of it if they want to, come back to the Garden for game seven.
Even though the Knicks didn't have great results early in the game, I felt watching that game, I felt from the get-go, they were playing more like a desperate team than Miami did.
Yep.
And I think they definitely ramped that up as the game went along. You mentioned they got to the free throw line, they had 40 attempts. Miami only had 19. So when you double up the other team's free throw attempts, that's generally a reflection of a much more aggressive mindset by your players. You're going hard, you're cutting hard, you're pounding the glass, you're getting, going after loose balls, whatever. So I thought the Knicks really, they totally deserved it. But here's the thing. Kevin Love was 0 for 7 shooting threes. Okay. Jimmy Butler had one of his worst offensive games of the entire postseason. And you give Quentin Grimes plenty of credit for that. I mean, and we have, and he deserves it. But I don't expect both of those things to happen on Friday. R.J. Barrett has been excellent all series. He averages nearly 23 a game. And Tom Thibodeau and Michael Worldby Freer need that R.J. Barrett to show up on Friday in South Beach, because they're not winning that next game unless R.J. Barrett has a really nice game for those guys. Because Bam Adebayo was sort of ordinary on Wednesday, but even for him, ordinary is really good. I mean, I love that guy. I think he's great. So, yeah, R.J. Barrett, you better show up on Friday or else Michael Freer and others are going to be very, very upset.
Well, I'll tell you this real quick. You mentioned you don't expect Miami to shoot like, they have some of those guys. They have shot that way all series. They're shooting 31% from three-point range for the series. And the last three games, they're shooting less than 30% over the last three games from three. So this is that Miami team. That's a Miami team that was bottom five in three-point shooting in the regular season and somehow picked it up and shot almost 50% on threes and beating Milwaukee. That was the shocker. This version of Miami is not the shocker. It's the performance in the first round series against the Bucks, their offensive execution, that was the biggest surprising thing. 29-5 in points off turnovers, but Miami was in game five, and they still lost because they just can't shoot otherwise. So they get the points, they grind out the other points. They give you the effort stuff. That's, very commendable, and I've talked about it. That's outstanding play and outstanding effort. They're the biggest, most hustling team in this postseason, but if they don't have the offense, it gives teams that match your intensity a lot of chances.
But see, Kevin Love, I mean, there's bad shooting, and then there's 0 for 7 on threes. If he was 2 for 7 on threes, that's a bad shooting night, okay? 0 for 7, I just don't see that repeating. Because if he was 2 for 7, now it's like a two-possession game in theory.
Yeah, and I think you guys crushed this updated series review out of the park. I think the two biggest things I had mentioned are written down urgency as the word for the Knicks, what they showed in game five. They're going to need to bring that urgency and desperation, as Bruce alluded to, on the road in Miami on Friday. And then the player to watch would be R.J. Barrett. Couldn't agree more. He's got to step up, have a big game, and hopefully tomorrow night will be a lot of fun, and the Knicks can keep this alive, because nothing would be better than a game seven at Madison Square Garden. And I think most NBA fans outside of Miami would agree with that. And with that, let's go ahead and get to our halftime buzzer. We'll take a quick break and come back with you for the second half.
World B's dying to say something, Ross.
Yeah, let's hear it before we get.
you guys are ready to get RJ Barrett jerseys just to spite me at this point. And that's,
we might.
And that's all right. You know what? And that's all right. I do not mind being wrong. I've been married for over 15 years. I know all about being wrong.
If you guys make the NBA Finals, I'll get an RJ Barrett NBA Finals jersey. How about that? We'll have the Larry O'Brien on that uniform.
I'm fine with it.
Not me, but I'll see if I have an old Knicks hat I can wear on the show that night. I doubt I do.
There we go. I can send you one if you don't. I have plenty of
that's
Knicks
okay.
hats.
That's all right. It's
okay. All right. Just offering. But for our third quarter, let's go ahead and discuss the Golden State Warriors as they defended their home floor on Wednesday night. Anthony Davis, again, reportedly avoided concussion protocol somehow and is now listed as probable for game 6. World B, I'm going to start with you. I've asked you all season long, can the Golden State Warriors win a road game?
I think they proved in the last year they absolutely can. And certainly if AD is not 100%, that really helps their chances because he's absolutely been a difference maker in this series. It gets old. We talk about the same subjects over and over. But it all boils down to defense for them on the road. But in that Kings series, they showed they can play the defense. They had the number three offensive team in the league in Sacramento, and they shut them down in Sacramento the last couple of road games in that series. And they've absolutely played well defensively in this series right now. I mean, the last two games, one of them, resulted in a loss, but still they've held the Lakers under 110 points per 100 possessions each game. That if you can do that, most of the time you're going to win. And their offense has to pick up, and that that requires Steph and Clay and those guys to be on their game. So I absolutely think they can. I'm when the playoffs started, you were asking me, and I was saying they got to prove it. I've been saying it the whole season. They got to prove it. They got to prove it on the road. And hey, they're starting to prove it.
And Bruce, you were at this series. I mean, give us a little insight on what you saw there live.
Draymond Green absolutely positively set the tone for the Warriors on Wednesday night. He had 20 points, he had 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, a block shot. It was his second 20-point game in the playoffs. Now, I have a question for both of you. I just want a one-word answer. Do you know how many 20-point games Draymond Green had in the regular season? Want to take a guess?
None.
Zero.
Zero is right. Okay. You guys, I should have known you would know that. You're pretty bright. But anyway, the point being, he had none. But he is the emotional engine of the Warriors, much the same way Marcus Smart is the emotional engine of the Celtics. When he goes out there and puts it all out on the line like he did on Wednesday night, the other guys get in line. We've talked about his flaws many times, his stupid technical fouls, his dumb suspensions, all that stuff. But there's a reason that his teammates and his coach never stopped loving him. And the reason is he does what has to be done. He's the leader of their team, even in a different way than Steph. Steph is the Warriors, okay? He is the Warriors. But Draymond Green is just like the guy. Every player on that team knows that he has their back and that when he's out there and he's not off the court for dumb reasons, he does all these things to help them win and to stick it to the other team while he's at it. I mean, we've seen him do this, time after time after time. But here's the thing. As Raymond Ritter reminded me, Raymond is the longtime Warriors PR guy, best in the business. He's famous. You hear his name on TV all the time. He told me before game – he told me before game 3, just want to remind you guys, the Warriors have won at least one road game in 28 consecutive playoff series, okay, which is an unbelievable record. And it's like, yep, it was in your notes. We know it. It's true. It's incredible. And then they proceeded to lose 2 games, okay? Well, Friday night, they have their one last chance to extend that streak. And you know what? I think they're going to do it. And here's why I think they're going to do it. Kevon Looney had a great game one in this series with 23 rebounds, and then he suffered some sort of sickness. I remember, you know, he didn't play much for like the next, you know, three games. But in game five, his minutes started to ramp up a little bit. He was up to 20 minutes, which was the most minutes he had played since game one. In his 20 minutes, he got 8 rebounds. I see Kevon Looney continuing to sort of gather a little momentum in his own game. And I had said before the series began that I thought he was the second most important player for the Warriors because of the work he was doing on the boards. I believe he's going to have a big game on the glass on Friday night, and I believe the Warriors are going to extend that streak. And this is going to be game 7 on Sunday in the Chase Center.
I agree with you there, Bruce. Don't have a best bets here tonight, but we'll certainly promote this one here for Bet Online. Plus 120 for the Warriors to go ahead and win tomorrow night. I would take that in a heartbeat and run with it. I think the Golden State Warriors are going to win on the road, as they have historically, thanks to your big fun fact there. I thought Draymond Green was tremendous. Obviously, he hit the first shot of the game. He had a three-pointer. I think he really kind of just surprised the Lakers' defense. And once he showed some aggression, I think it also opened up Andrew Wiggins. Wiggins had a huge night, 25 points on 10 of 18 shooting. Mm-hmm. I think Draymond Green had a lot to do with that, with him elevating his game. You know, most of this series, we've seen Draymond Green kind of hesitant to shoot the ball, and not comparing the players one bit, so don't take it this way. But as far as we're just talking offensively speaking, you know, he's got to flash the shot a lot like we used to say with Ben Simmons, and he wasn't doing that for the longest time. Yesterday, he certainly proved that. I think he was double-digit scoring at the end of the first quarter. I mean, he was just tremendous out there, and I think that was the main difference maker for Golden State in this one, and I think Draymond's going to keep it up as this show hits the road in Los Angeles tomorrow night.
I'll tell you what, you guys both like the Warriors, and that's fine. I think, you know, the heart of the champion or whatever, as Rudy T once said, is alive and well with this team, but if they don't get better shooting from Clay, who's shooting 33% on threes the last three games, and they don't get better shooting from Steph from the outside, and if Jordan Poole can't hit a basket anymore from the perimeter, they gave him minutes in game five, and he still was 1 for 6 from three. If they don't get better shooting from those guys from the perimeter, they're not going back to Golden State to play another game. I that's how I feel. And they could do it, but they have to show it. One more time, they got to prove it to me that they can do it.
See, I agree when it comes to Clay. Clay is shooting a combined 6 of 23 the last two games. That's 26%, okay? He's shooting a little better, actually, on threes. But overall, 26% in the last two games. Get him the ball early. He needs to see the ball go in the basket early, all right? Maybe a layup. Maybe run something for him in the post. Maybe just give him a couple shots early. Let him shoot it and let him see a couple go in. But let's talk about the other guys, okay? I'm really concerned that Anthony Davis, even if he does play, wouldn't you be just a little bit gun-shy about some of those, like some of that rough action underneath the boards when Kevon Looney's out there with his big body and spreading out and grabbing rebounds and turning? And if you're there when that elbow hits, you see how devastating it can be. Or Draymond Green, who you know, Draymond Green is going to test him tomorrow night or Friday yep. night, because he's going to say, this guy got his bell rung. Let's see if he really belongs out here. You know, Draymond's going to do that. He's doing that his whole career. And we talked about that a couple minutes ago. Okay. I think, you know, LeBron James is routinely unbelievable. Okay. He will show up. He will do everything he can do, but you know what, if he doesn't have at least an 80% Anthony Davis, all that great guard play that they've been getting, especially in the previous couple games by Dennis Schroeder, but also, you know, Lonnie Walker, which we'll talk about a little later in the, you know, my conversation about seeing some of those games. The guard play's been great. LeBron's right there. Rui Hachimura's kind of gone off the cliff in this series. He's been on the side of a milk carton for the most part, but he's capable. Again, if AD's not playing up to his minutes, Rui's going to be in for some more minutes, I think, and he might have a chance to do something to help them. But this is, you know, I got to see AD get something done early in this game and be aggressive. And if he takes a hit, get up and come right back at him, because I'm not quite sure he's got that in him. I hope he does for competition's sake, but I know he's going to be tested.
My prediction for this for game six is real simple. I think LeBron James is going to have his best offensive game of the series, maybe of the postseason. He's starting to shoot the ball from the perimeter, which he hadn't done not only during the regular season, but during the postseason. He was the worst. I mentioned before, he was the worst shooter in the first round from the three-point range. He's starting to hit him the last couple of games. He hit three in game five. So I think he's feeling it. I think he's getting healthier. And I think he's going to have his best offensive game. I mean, 35 and whatever, you know, 35-plus points at least, you know, minimum from him. And I think he's going to have his best game. Whether it's enough to win, we'll see. But I think he's ready to have his breakout game in his postseason.
Hot take time from World B. I love to see it. Another weird thing for this game, of course, Steph Curry played 39 minutes, scored 27 points, didn't attempt a free throw in this one. So that's obviously got to change too. He's got to get to the foul line a little bit. For Clay, obviously seeing one go through the basket, if he can get to the foul line early, that might even help his confidence there early. And then the one guy on the Lakers that definitely has to step up, and this is my favorite Laker, Jared Vanderbilt. 10 minutes, 0 points, one rebound. That's not going to get it done with maybe at best a 70% Anthony Davis tomorrow night. At best, they're going to need huge contributions from Vanderbilt along with Rui Hachimura, like you said, Bruce. But as we get to this fourth quarter, you know, Bruce, it's been your big week on the road. You've been covering this historic Lakers-Warriors matchup, King James versus Steph Curry. Tell us a little bit about the experience producing these games. Obviously, you were at games 2, 3, and 4 of this series for ESPN Radio. What was that experience like just being in those two buildings?
There's really two unbelievable venues for basketball games. The Chase Center. I mean, I was at the finals when they played in Oakland, and that place was nuts. It was maybe even a little bit more nuts than the Chase Center. The Chase Center is nuts, but in a little bit more of a, you know, I don't know. I can't really describe it. It's a more modern building. Everything in there is modern. The lights, the everything. It's a palace, okay? As far as the Crypto.com Arena in LA, also a really exciting venue. The fans for both teams are nuts. They were paying a lot of money for the tickets. The basketball was good. I mean, just, you know, being able to work with, you know, my previous company, producing some games on radio was just a wonderful experience for me. I mean, after doing TV for all those years, you know, I was always, you know, a TV producer, but the radio producing is a whole lot of fun. We get to, you know, do pregame interviews with the coaches. So we had private meetings with Darvin Ham and with Steve Kerr before each game. Okay. Two unbelievably impressive guys. I mean, really, Darvin Ham, if you've never spent any time with him, you can see how he commands such respect from everybody around him. First of all, he's physically very imposing. He's a big, beefy, strong guy. He's got a, you know, shaved head. He talks in a very low but forceful tone. And he's honest. I mean, he was honest with us. He's honest with his team. There's, you know, there are very much similarities, I believe, to what Ime Udoka brought to Boston last year. Very kind of a similar demeanor, you know, journeyman player, great basketball brain. And Steve Kerr is just simply like, he's like the boy next door, except he's super smart. He's a master psychologist. He knows how to lead people. All right. He doesn't have to get angry and yell and whatever. He just has this sort of kind of, not to steal a Phil Jackson expression, but this sort of Zen calmness about him that stuff's going crazy and he's just Steve doing his thing. So the personalities, having the chance to really talk to those guys, not only on mic, as it were, for pregame interviews, but before the tape rolled, that was very impressive. And you can't help but be admirers of both of those guys.
No doubt. And obviously, you saw a lot of exciting action, a lot of great games within this series. Did you have a favorite one that you covered during this series?
No question about it. The Lonnie Walker IV game. You talk about a game that nobody in the world saw coming because the guy basically didn't take his warm-ups off for the first three quarters. And then they put him in the fourth quarter, and it's like this shot of adrenaline, just like, you know, it energized the Lakers. It demolished the Warriors. I mean, he had 15 points in the fourth quarter, 6 out of 9. I mean, he was aggressive. And, you know, it's funny when you're doing these radio games, okay, and when you're sitting in the arena, you can just see, like, we have to give them interview requests, like, because right when the game ends, there's a headset microphone basically on a table right at half court. So the winning team, Turner was doing some of the games, ESPN was doing some of the games. TV will always get the first choice because it's TV, right? So you have to give them two or three choices for who you would like to interview. And you know that one of them you're not going to get because they're going on TV. So, you know, we had asked before the game four, I had given, you know, the Warriors my three, and I gave the Lakers my three. And the three were LeBron, who I knew we weren't going to get, AD, who I figured we might get. And then the third one at the time was Reeves, okay? Because through the first three quarters, he was pretty good. But yep. I had to give that to them early in the fourth quarter. And as things went on, I knew, okay, now I'm going to have to reach back out to these guys and say, I think we need Lonnie Walker if they win. Yep. And you know, the PR guy for the Lakers, Mitch Heckart, totally understood. I said, look, can we change Reeves to Lonnie's here? Absolutely. Thank you. He thanked me for changing the request because he knew that TV wasn't going to ask for Lonnie Walker, but that Lonnie Walker was the star of the game. And it's kind of like what we do on 48 Minutes here. We don't just pay attention to the big names. You have to, you know, you have to go for the best story or the best anecdote, whatever. And Lonnie Walker was terrific. When the game ended, you guys watched that game probably. They yep. mobbed him like he was the Super Bowl MVP in the middle of the court. It's like, wait, where's Lonnie Walker? He was totally engulfed by like all these people on the Lakers. And it was just such a great story. I mean, if the Lakers win this series, Laker fans in 10, 15 years are going to be talking. Remember that Lonnie Walker game? That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I do got to say, now that you have shared your list of the people you wanted to talk to after the game, I'm kind of surprised Kim Kardashian didn't make the list. She was at two of those Laker games. You didn't put her on the list of someone to talk to?
I've always sort of felt she was a little bit overrated, you know? I mean, I know that she was the master of the backdoor play, but you know, beyond that, you know, she didn't put up any points.
All right. Well, appreciate
we're all blushing on that one, aren't we?
Yeah.
For those listening and not watching on YouTube, watch it on YouTube too, because our faces are bright red right now.
Yeah. Well said there, Bruce. And appreciate you sharing some of that insight from your week on the road for that fantastic series. And with that, let's go ahead and get to our final thought. And World B, how about you lead us off?
Thank you, Ross. Sticking with basketball, but getting away from the NBA for a minute. To say it's been an interesting week for West Virginia University men's basketball coach Bob Huggins would be an understatement. Huggins, who has been the Mountaineers coach since 2006 and last summer was inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, was disciplined by the university for going on a radio show in Cincinnati Monday and using an insensitive, hurtful, anti-gay slur towards Xavier University and its fans. His pathetic attempt at humor turned out to be ridiculously dumb and ignorant towards many, if not most, in the LGBTQ community. Huggins quickly apologized for his comments later that afternoon, which lets you know just how stupid his remarks were. There were calls from fans and media for some form of punishment for Huggins, with everything from a suspension to an immediate dismissal on the table. After a review of the situation, the school elected to allow Huggins to keep his job, but hardly let him off the hook for his actions. He was suspended for the first three games of the upcoming season, had his salary reduced by $1 million, which the school said would go directly to support West Virginia University's LGBTQ plus center, and had his contract amended from a multi-year deal to one that will be year-to-year going forward. Now, in full disclosure, I should note that I am a proud WVU alum and have respected Coach Huggins, for the way he had built the Mountaineer basketball program over the years, as well as the pride he takes in representing this great state of West Virginia. Until Monday, his reputation had been that of a brilliant basketball coach who has worked for many terrific causes in that state, including hosting an annual fundraising event to help, among many things, build a cancer center at WVU. But I am also someone who found his remarks on that radio show to be unacceptable and repugnant, and said so publicly on social media. And while I personally believe his comments were not a fireable offense, had he been fired, it would have been understandable, and the only blame for that would have lied with Huggins himself. Reaction from many in the national media about the school's decision has basically had the same theme. The school somehow bowed to Huggins, and that by letting him keep his job, the university revealed that Bob Huggins is somehow the most powerful person in the state. If anyone else in any other job had made those comments, people argued, they'd have been fired immediately. Regardless of how anyone feels about this decision, the idea that Bob Huggins got away with something is flat out inaccurate. He has been fined. He has been suspended. His job status has gone from lifetime to year, and he must look in the faces of those he hurt in the LGBTQ community and be reminded just how hurtful and insulting his remarks were to so many people. Bob Huggins didn't lose his job this week, but he lost something just as valuable to many. He lost his reputation.
Well said there, Will B. Thanks for your reflection on that circumstance this week. Bruce?
The two J's, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, are both all-NBA players. Tatum is first team, Brown is second team. They're considered by most observers as the top duo in the NBA. Tatum is 25, Brown is 26. Brown and Tatum have been to the Eastern Conference Finals three times as teammates and the NBA Finals once, but they're looking for their first title. It's fair to say that considering their relative youth, their best basketball is still in front of them. Now, another great duo, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, played in the NBA Finals together six times and won their first championship when Jordan was 28 and Pippen was just shy of 26. They were 6-0 in the finals together. Another legendary duo, Jerry West and Elgin Baylor, played 11 seasons together and played in the NBA Finals together six times, but they were 0-6 in their trips. Right now, Tatum and Brown are tied with Baylor and West, but they have lots of runway in front of them as far as future success is concerned. And while few, if any, observers of the game expect Brown and Tatum to win six rings like MJ and Pip, most expect Brown and Tatum to win it all eventually, perhaps even more than once. But since they're struggling to even make the Eastern Conference Finals this season, they'll have a lot of work ahead of them before we find out whether their career achievements will be closer to Pippen and Jordan or West and Baylor. But this much we know. West, Jordan, Baylor, and Pippen are all in the Hall of Fame, and one day Brown and Tatum may join them. But in Boston, the bar for success is set pretty high. Only two of the Celtics players who have had their numbers retired, Ed McCauley and Reggie Lewis, never won a championship. As for the two J's, they hope not to be the third and fourth.
Yeah, and it should be a very interesting offseason with Jaylen Brown and seeing how they navigate these negotiations with him to see if he can continue to be that dynamic duo with Jason Tatum in Boston. Great job there, Bruce. As for mine, I spoke too early on the Suns' exciting and interesting developing story of broadcasting their future games on free TV moving forward. The Suns were actually sued for the attempt to abandon the regional sports network currently broadcasting their games, and they lost that battle. How long the regional sports network reportedly going bankrupt will continue to win this battle is still very uncertain. But for now, Matt Ishbia's goal of making the Suns games more accessible to all fans has come to a halt. And certainly, I for one, am disappointed by it because I thought it was going to be a great thing here for the Valley, the Sun, and all the young sports fans growing up here, hopefully to have the same opportunity I did to watch the Phoenix Suns play, especially during this exciting time. So hopefully we will see that in the future. But Hope I didn't jinx it with one of our classic 48 minutes jinxes using this for a final thought on a previous episode. So my bad, Phoenix, it might be on me. But with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 minutes podcast on Believe presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Have a great weekend, everyone.